Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, welcome back to the Podcrashed. This week, we're telling the story of Varig Flight 254. Thanks for listening.
Whew. We have 13 pages of notes, Mariah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. I love you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I don't know if people can hear Frank on the recording. I should go back and listen.
Yeah. I don't hear a lot of cats. Brian might be cutting them out, though. That's the thing. I don't know what he does before I get it. So, but
those naughty babies.
We'll see if we are interrupted by gatitos today. Yeah. And let's do it. So today, we're telling the story of Varig Flight 254. Varig is a kind of still existing, kind of no longer existing Brazilian airline. So it like switched in 1990. It kind of like split into two different airlines. I can't pretend to understand it.
Okay.
But have you ever heard of it? I'm not super familiar with it, but it was, it was like the major airline in Brazil.
Yeah.
Prior to 1990. And we're going back to September 3rd, 1989. So
okay.
I don't know what was going on in the world, in Brazil, in the airline, whatever, but let's find out. So we are flying a 737, the most popular plane ever made, and therefore very likely to show up in our stories, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And we are flying it from Sao Paulo. Oh, we're going to have a tough time with some of these names.
Yeah.
To Uberabas, to Uberlandia, to Guainania, to Santa Genoveva, to Brasilia, to it's also my handwriting is the problem.
Yeah, it's fair.
To Maraba, to Belém.
That's
so
a lot of stops.
We have a day ahead of us as a pilot, right? It's a lot for sure. And we are flying the 737, hop, 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 all across Brazil from south to north. And the final stop, Belém, is on like the ocean, kind of like on the Atlantic Ocean, but really it's like on an estuary of a tributary of the Amazon River. So it's like kind of at like the, if you have your little mental map and you imagine the Amazon River and it's flowing from west to east, does that sound right? I think it is east to west, who can say? And the like part of the river where it's like meeting the ocean. Yeah, it's got to be west to east. So it's meeting the ocean and there's that like broad area that's brackish water, kind of salty, kind of not. That's Belém. That's where we're heading. That's where we're going to stop today. But it's a long day of flying.
Yeah.
And I tried so hard to find out when this plane was born, and I couldn't. Hmm. As far as I can tell, it's just not, it's not in the translation of the like report that I found. It's not, I don't know, but it is an old model of the 737, even for 1989.
Okay.
It's
So it's a little older.
It's, it's maybe my guess. So it's a 737-200. They started making those in the 60s. I kind of think this plane was born in the 60s because it's an oldie but a goodie, but it is missing some of the stuff that we kind of take for granted on planes, particularly navigational equipment.
Okay.
So, but we're doing our best. And when I say we, I mean our captain, Cesar. He is 32. He has been flying. He like joined up and learned how to fly in like a military academy when he was 19. So he's been flying since they let him. And he's been with the airline flying commercially for about 7 years. But he's fairly new to the 737. Hmm. And again, this one, I don't know if Eric had like some newer models. This is one of the older models. Cesar and First Officer Nielsen. And Nielsen is 29. He's like pretty new. He has fewer than 800 total flight hours. And he's pretty new, but he's a First Officer. So Cesar and Nielsen are here to take you on this little hop, 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 hop journey, right? And we're starting our day at 9:40 a.m. and we're hoping to be done on the ground in Belém by around 5:40 p.m. So we're really, this sounds like a stressful day to me. I don't know. This is a lot like what I think a lot of pilots do every day to this day.
Well, and statistically, isn't this technically like the chances are much higher of something happening? Because isn't the like the landing and takeoff like the times when accidents happen the most?
Yeah, definitely. Landing and takeoff are definitely when things are most likely to go wrong in some way. And you're never getting up, you're never like really getting up that high, you know, you're not going to be at some, you know, over 30,000 feet cruising when you're going to be back down on the ground soon. And, but pilots do it every day.
Yeah.
Cesar just got back from vacation. His first day back. Hope he had a great vacation. And, everything is going smoothly all day long. They go from Sao Paulo to like they get through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They get through 6 of their 7 flights for the day. It's evening and they're in Marabá, which is their second to last airport of the day. And they are getting ready to go out to Belém. So we're wrapping it up. We're about to be done.
Yeah.
And Cesar, while like passengers are getting off, new passengers are getting on, they're fueling, they're doing the baggage stuff, whatever. Nielsen gets out and is doing the walk around, inspecting the plane. And Cesar is in the cabin, prepping the cockpit, doing the paperwork, doing the checklist, stuff like that. And the flight plan that he has says that the heading they're supposed to fly is 0270, which is 4 numbers. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to understand this. I certainly can't pretend to understand any of this stuff super well, but the heading is going to be like the highest number it can be is 360, right? It's like a 360, like, and a 360 would be like 4 numbers doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So 0270. If you saw that, Mariah, not to put you on the spot or like give you a pop quiz, but if you saw 4 numbers, 0270, what heading would you punch in? What like three number? Which of those three numbers?
I would just
270.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah.
Totally. That's exactly what Cesar did.
Yeah.
270. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
He wrote 270 on his paperwork. He punched in. Well, there's not a lot of punching in because we're a little rudimentary plane here.
Yeah, yeah.
Goody, but a oldie, but a goodie. And so he punches in 270. And then Nielsen hops on and they're going through everything. And he copies 270 off of Cesar's paperwork. Right. He's matching everything up.
Yeah.
While Cesar was on vacation, for reasons that I do not know, the airline had, instead of, they'd gone from writing three numbers to four numbers. And you're supposed to know, you're supposed to intuit, you're supposed to read it kind of like money, maybe, is the best example I can come up with. And you're supposed to imagine a decimal. And the decimal is supposed to be to the left of the rightmost number. And I know that is like a not going to be a clear description for everyone. But what it boils down to is the airline wants you to read 0270 as 27 or 027.0.
That seems like a horrific system.
I don't disagree. I don't think Cesar was on like months of vacation, right? I don't know. It's maybe it was a nice, I hope it was nice and I hope it was long, but it wasn't that long, right? And it's not intuitive. And I'm going to say this right at the start. After everything we're going to talk about today, the aviation authority in Brazil did kind of like a pop quiz of pilots. They took 21 pilots and they showed them 0270 and they said, what heading do you think this is? And 15 of them said heading 270.
Yeah.
So, but the airline want it, what they're intending, what they want you to read is 27. Now, this is a very, very, very pivotal thing. You do not have to understand the ins and outs of this. If you do understand it, then tell me more about it. But in the simplest possible terms, Belém is north of Marabá. They need to fly north. 270, that heading is going to bring them west. So right from the get, they are writing down and fully preparing to go in the wrong direction.
And they don't know at this point that it's pointing them west.
They don't know. Well, and that's kind of the thing, right? If they were in a different headspace, if someone questioned it, if Cesar was teaching, you know, a brand new pilot, if they were like, they're in a different headspace, they might say like, wait a second, that doesn't make any sense, right?
Right.
But it's the last flight of the day. I have no idea if this is a part of it, but Argentina and Brazil are playing each other later this night to see who's going to go to the World Cup. And they probably want to get to Belém so they can watch it. And the paper says 270. Cesar writes 270. Nielsen copies off his paper and writes 270. It doesn't click. They take off for their last flight of the day. This flight is very short. This is like New York to Syracuse or something, like a very short flight, yeah. 48 minutes total, up and down. Their cruising altitude is 29,000 feet, not that high, and they're going to come right back down. And they're going to be on the ground and they're going to be done with their day. And
what time is
on board with them? They have four flight attendants and 48 passengers. So on a 737-200, this is like one of the longer 737s. I can hear you. Yes.
You can hear me now? Okay.
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There's 48 passengers, two pilots, four flight attendants, and they are ready for this incredibly short flight. So they take off.
What time of day is it?
It's 5:45.
Okay.
It's like getting into evening. And at this time of year, in this part of the world, the sun is going to set in like, it's going to be setting, it's going to be dusky when they land. Like if they land when they want to, which is like 5:40, they will land a little before sunset.
Okay.
So they're taken off. They've still got the sun. In this place at this time, it's not just their plane that doesn't have all of the things that we're used to and that we take for granted when we fly, right? Obviously, we enjoy like a huge, like amazing, incredible advances in what planes can do and navigational equipment and GPS. And like, I don't need to know where anything is in my own town because right. I can use GPS, right? Like all of this stuff. This plane, it's not just this plane that doesn't have this stuff. In this part of the world at this time, nobody's got that stuff, right? Like right. even stuff like radar at the airport is not that common. So the airport they're leaving doesn't have radar. The airport they're flying to, Bellum, doesn't have radar. It's we're working with simpler tools, right? Yeah. They take off, and because the flight is so short, while they're ascending, Cesar is flying, and Nielsen is already trying to set the HSI, which is like their like internal, the little needle on their aircraft, to Bellum's VOR. Mm. So maybe in other stories, we've talked about how like this runway doesn't have an ILS system. It only has a VOR, and the VOR is like a much simpler kind of like little like radio frequency that the airport sends out and tells you like, this is where I am. And your plane can like latch onto that and know where the airport is. Right. Okay. Yeah. So he's punching it in. He's trying to connect to it and he can't connect. It's just not connecting. But like, okay, you know, maybe it's broken. It's been working on their aircraft all day, but maybe it's a problem with their aircraft. But, you know, maybe the system's just broken at Bellum. Oh, well, right. We'll be there soon enough anyway. So while they're ascending, heading toward flight level 29,000, where they'll cruise for like 10 minutes and they'll come back down and they'll land. As they're going up and out to the west, there's actually a passenger in the back who takes this flight all the time. And he's like pretty much right away, like, this isn't right.
Wow.
This isn't right. This doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And that passenger like gets the flight attendant and is like, hey, like something is weird. Like this is not the right way at all. And the flight attendant is just like, who are you?
Yeah, you know? There could like, be a million reasons, yeah.
Right. Like, I'm sure she was gracious and polite, you know, I hope, and but she was just kind of like, you know, thanks for flying with us or whatever, you know, and just doesn't, you know, keeps doing her job, you know. This is also, like, this is the luxury era of flying, right? So she is going around, even though it is such a short flight, she's, like, going around and, you know, the flight attendants are working, right? And so they don't pass anything along. They're just like, I don't know what to tell you, champ. Like, sorry, enjoy your drink. Have a cigarette. Like, they're getting ready to descend into Bellum. They're up at 29,000 feet. They're flying. The clock is ticking away. The sun is getting lower in the sky, and it's getting lower in the sky in front of them, right? They're flying west, but it doesn't click.
Ugh. I thought the sun was going to be the thing.
I know. It doesn't click.
Yeah.
And so they try to call Bellum Air Traffic Control because they want to ask if they can start to descend and toward the airport. And they don't get anything back. The air traffic controller doesn't answer them. And they keep calling and they're just not getting a response. So because nothing makes sense ever, okay, the VHF radio, right? VHF stands for very high frequency. That's the normal shorter range radio that they would use to communicate with air traffic control. Mm-hmm. And they switched to HF, which just stands for high frequency radio. So very high is the shorter range. What are you going to do? I don't know why things are the way they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
They switch over to the longer range radio and try to call the air traffic controller in Bellum. And Nielsen is, Cesar is flying, Nielsen's on the radio, and he gets through to other aircraft. Like, he can hear other aircraft flying into Bellum. He can hear that. And he actually contacts the nautical coordinator at Bellum. So again, it's on the estuary. It's the same building that has the approach controller at Bellum. In like another office in the same building is a like nautical coordinator who's like coordinating boats. Mm. And like that just must be a very exciting place to work, I imagine. But
yeah.
He gets through to the nautical coordinator, and the nautical coordinator is like, I don't know why. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, the air traffic controller only has the VHF radio. I have this one. Like, I can.
Yeah.
Hear you. I can communicate with you. They don't have that kind of radio, but I know their radio is working. I don't know why you can't get them, right? And they don't know either, but now they're talking to somebody who's in the building and they can communicate with other planes. So they just do a relay system. It's just like, hey, can you ask the air traffic controller if I can come down to like start to descend into Bellum? Mm-hmm. And they pass it along, and then air traffic controller is like, go for it. Come on down.
Oh,
like,
boy.
Totally. I don't know. And again, if you're maybe in a situation, I don't know how unusual this would be at all for the air traffic controllers, right? Like, they don't necessarily have an explanation or know why, you know, you're having a hard time contacting them,
right,
or anything like that. But stuff breaks, things are quirky, radios don't make sense, whatever, you know. So they start to descend. And as they're descending, like, Cesar and Nielsen are like, they know something doesn't feel right, but it's not clicking. And they still can't pick up the VOR of Bellum. Like, they still aren't connecting to the airport by radio or by their internal, like, the plane system. And they can't get in direct contact with air traffic control. But they can, on the higher range radio, they can talk to them and they can hear the other planes landing and stuff. And
yeah.
As they're descending, like, it doesn't look right, because they should be able to start to see the river, maybe the ocean, the city of Bellum. And they don't, all they see is jungle. All they see is jungle. And they keep going down, and they feel like they really should be able to see it. And like, time ticks by, they get down to 8,000 feet, and like, they were supposed to be on the ground after like 48 minutes, and it's been like 40 minutes, and they still don't see anything. It's
right.
Just jungle, 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 jungle under them. And they're getting nervous, and they call Bellum again through the like relay system, either talking to like the nautical controller or other planes. And Bellum says, like, I don't have radar, you know, as you know, like, the airport doesn't have radar. I can't see you or find you. We're here, you know. I don't know. I don't know. And they ask if they can descend lower to like really make sure they see it, and they get permission and they descend lower, and they fly until they're 30 miles past where they should have landed.
Yeah.
They've flown 30 miles further than they should have. And Cesar and Nielsen are just like, okay, so we must have overshot it. I don't know how, but we must have just overshot it.
Yeah.
And so they turn around, make a 180-degree turn, and go back the way they came. And they call and ask if they can descend to 4,000 feet because, like, now it's getting dark and they want to see it. And they get permission, go down to 4,000 feet, and they're looking and looking and looking, and it's just nothing but jungle, 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 jungle. And the passengers are getting more and more anxious, frustrated. What the hell? The guy who had originally said something is like, I told you, like, hey, this is the wrong way. And now the sun is going down, and Cesar asks Bellum through the relay system, or asks other flights, like, is the electricity out in Bellum or something? And they're like, no, it's normal here. Nielsen tries to see if they could get a local. So this is, I don't know. Nielsen has an idea. And he says, why don't we try to find a local radio station? Like, I know a couple of the stations in Bellum. And because, again, this is an older plane, and before we had the things we have now, they had systems that worked with what they had at the time. And so on this aircraft, there's a system where you can tune into a radio frequency. And if you're locked into it, right, like a radio, I don't understand the different kinds of radios, guys, I'm so sorry. But if you log in, you can get like you can point toward it, right? And it'll be like clearer and stronger the closer you get. And you can like fly toward the radio tower, basically, until you find Bellum in this case. And it's a pretty interesting idea, right? They're just trying to figure this out. So Nielsen tries to see, like, flipping through radio stations, like KISS 98.5, like just regular radio stations. And he flips to one that he is aware of. And it's really, you're kind of picking it up, but it's, you know, very crackly and not clear. And he switches to one that's radio liberal, right? And so he switches to that. They got a clear, strong signal. Good. And they tune the equipment into that one. It's playing mass, and they like mass, like Eucharist mass, and like Catholic mass.
Amazing.
And they listen to mass and they tune into that and they head in that direction. But it's not radio liberal, as you and I and maybe anyone who's ever used a car radio knows, like, in different areas, the same number will be a different channel. And not only is it not radio liberal, it's Radio Brasil Central. It is a radio station broadcasting from central Brazil.
Oh my God.
800 miles south of them.
Ugh.
And they tune into that.
The opposite of north.
Yeah. So they've flown, instead of flying north, they've flown west, and now they're flying south. And Cesar sees but south kind of makes sense because they think in their head, their mental map, they think they were flying north and overshot it. And so now we're flying south, and that makes sense. So, and Cesar, they're looking down. They're only at 4,000 feet. They have a decent view of the ground. And he sees a river. And in this part of the world, right, like, the river is either going to be the Amazon River or a tributary of the Amazon River. And so if we just follow this river, like, we're going to end up where we're going, because that's right where Bellum is. So the river is running in the same direction that they're going, which, again, if they put it all together, doesn't make sense, because you can't be flying south towards Bellum and following a river south, because that's not the way that the river goes. But again, they're scrambling and trying to figure it out, and they're lost. But they see the river, and the river is going in the same direction as the radio signal, and it that confirmation bias, it like verifies what they think they're supposed to do, and they're following this river, and they fly on and on and on and on and on, and it's totally dark now. Miles and miles and miles southwest, 4,000 feet above endless, endless, endless Amazon jungle.
Oh.
30 minutes go by, 30 minutes of flying beyond when they should have landed. They've almost doubled the amount of time that they were supposed to be in the air. And Nilsson, Cesar is the one who's actually physically flying, and he's looking and he's, you know, scanning, looking for lights, looking for anything. And Nilsson starts to like go through all the paperwork, right? Like what is happening? Like just flipping through everything, looking through. And he sees it. Nilsson wasn't on vacation. Nilsson knows that 027 is supposed to mean 27 degrees. And he sees it and he tells Cesar, but where are they?
Right.
Where are they? And they try to like retrace and try to fit this new correct information into what they've already been doing. And they talk through what they've done and they try to just, it makes my head hurt just trying to think about like how difficult it would be to reconstruct where you are in the dark black night over the jungle at the end of your work day where you've been up and down, up and down, up and down all day. The river, Cesar tells like Nilsson, like you go get the maps, like all the maps that are in like the back of the cockpit, like grab all of the maps. We're going to figure out where we are. We're going to find a place to land. And he ascends. Cesar is flying, ascends to 8,500 feet because like fuel isn't infinite, right? And so he decides he's going to go up so A, they can get a wider view now that they know they're not going to come up to Bellum and want to land, that he goes up so they can get like a wider vantage point and to maximize their flight time because like, what if we run out of fuel?
Right.
And Nilsson comes and like sits down with the maps and they're like, looking at the maps and they're going through everything and they're trying to like figure out where they are, and they finally figure out that the river they've been following is the Zingu River, and that they try to figure out where they are and they try to see who they can talk to, and for whatever reason they're still talking, like if they talk to anyone it's still relaying back to Bellum because that's still where they're supposed to be going. And they, looking at the maps, they decide to try to head toward Santorini Airport, which would mean from where they think they are now, they would have to turn around and head north of where they are. And so they turn around and head straight back north from where they'd been going. But while Cesar does that, he turns around and Nilsson does the math. And doing the math, like, no, we don't have enough fuel to go there. And so Cesar turns back around and goes back the other way. And they say, let's just go back to Maraba. We'll just go back to Maraba. Like, if we're here and that's the airport we started at, we'll just go there. And he tries to tune the navigation to Maraba. And Maraba and a totally different airport have the same radio frequency, which normally would be fine-ish, I guess. It doesn't seem ideal, but they have different Morse code IDs, which maybe in a different state of mind would be one thing, but right. He tunes it to the frequency of the airport they were just at, the place they took off from, and he tunes it to the, but it, again, I don't understand how radios work, but for whatever reason, their aircraft tunes in to the other airport, which is Goianina, which is 800 miles south of where they are, but he's not east, which is where Maraba is, but they tune into that. And it's the same direction they're already going, which has to, again, feel like good news. I don't know, but they don't really know where they are. And they think now they're going back toward the airport that they know can't be that far because they haven't been flying forever, right? And they're tuned into the wrong place and they just keep flying in the same direction they've been flying in. they took off at 5:45. Or that doesn't sound right. I'll change it later. I don't know. They took off.
I think initially you said 4:45.
Okay, I did. I realized this. Right. So I was wrong. So they took off at 5:45. Okay. They took off at 5:45. Okay. Because they were supposed to land at like 6:28. Okay. So they were supposed to land at 6:28. They took off at 5:45. At 8:05, 2 hours and 20 minutes into a 48-minute flight, Bellum calls them again. The nautical navigator or nautical coordinator calls them and is like, "What's going on, guys? Like, where are you? Where are you?" And Cesar tells them he's heading toward Maraba and they're tuned in to the Carajas beacon, right? Which is a beacon close to that airport. And Bellum says the Carajas beacon is shut off every day at 7:30. It's been shut off for over a half hour.
Oh.
And now they're just, oh my gosh. They're so confused. This is, they ask, what do they say? What do you say? And the Bellum, it tells them, like, we can call Carajas and tell them to illuminate the runway. Like, maybe that will help. Like, just get some light in the jungle. Like, try to something. Even though I don't think you're tuned into their beacon because their beacon is off. And they light it up, but they're not anywhere near it. So, of course, they don't see it. And they just keep flying. And at 8:30, they're still in the air. And they don't know where they are. And they're looking at the maps and they don't know that at 8:30, they actually pass within about 100 miles of an Air Force base. But they don't know because they don't know where they are. And they keep flying. And there's nothing but jungle, 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 jungle. Occasionally, like a little, like a light from a farm or a little fire or something. It's just nothing, nothing, nothing. And Cesar and Nielsen realize, like, they're going to run out of fuel. And they have to prepare for that. And they talk through it and they decide we're gonna stay right here at 8,000 feet until we completely run out of fuel to minimize the chance of an explosion or a fire. And at 8:40, they call Bellum again and they tell them we don't know where we are and we're gonna crash and I don't know what else to say. And a few minutes later, they haven't said anything. Like, there's been no communication between the flight attendants and the pilots. But at 8:45, Cesar makes an announcement over the PA and talks to the flight attendants and just say, we're lost and we're gonna crash land into the jungle in about 15 minutes. He tries to give the flight attendants time, and I can't just the flight attendant who that passenger had said something to, I don't know what it would be like to be her in this moment. The left engine died first. And 2 minutes later, the right engine died. And I looked as hard as I could to try to figure out when they started putting baby belly propelli on 737s, and I couldn't. But I'm pretty sure baby belly propelli or just the windmilling of the turbines from their momentum, whichever way, they had some very, 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 very basic instruments. And they're going to belly land in the middle of the jungle. And they have, like, they try to expand the flaps as much as they can, but they only get them to 10 degrees, and they try to control this, like, dead plane. And at 9:06, They hit the tops of trees that are 160 feet tall. This is like the heart. This is the like deep in the densest fathomable jungle. And they hit the tops of the trees and they start to fall like into belly first, like into the jungle. And the force when they, I do not know why, I do not know what was happening in this cabin, but some people were not buckled. I don't know why. As the plane falls like into the jungle, the wings get ripped off because these trees are ancient and massive, and the seats of the plane get ripped up and the overhead bins and the roof collapse and they fall into the jungle in complete darkness. And that night, there's just nothing anyone can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing. And I have very limited frame of reference for what this, even just being in the jungle, like on purpose in a tent is like, right? But like you and I have spent, like you've spent much more time in jungles than I have, but just, I don't know, just your body, like it's just like a pile of like metal and human people and like bugs and mosquitoes and snakes and little critters, and I love all those little critters, but like this hideous, like there's no fire, there's no explosion, and they just wait. By morning, 12 passengers had died. But everyone else, including all 6 crew members, had survived.
Oh my gosh.
And they try to like just pull everything apart and like come down out of this, like, it's hideous to think about, just like the crumpled mass of suffering in the jungle, and they pull everything apart as best as they can, and there's no food, and they build a fire to try to like let somebody know where they are, but it's the Amazon and people start fires like the slash and burn is like a very common way to like clear land, and they start a fire. And again, this is, I mean, they didn't take down the only massive trees. The trees are incredibly tall. The canopy is essentially completely blocking their view of the sky anyway. Yeah. And there's on the plane, there's like the beacon, right? Like the black box type of beacon. And the one that they happen to have, so they're like emergency locator transmitter, the TLE, I don't know how these things, we're working with more than one language here, right? Yeah. So the one that they have on this plane isn't activated by impact like modern ones. It's activated by submersion in water. And they need water. Forget that thing. They just need water because there are dozens of people in the jungle, right? But they also need water to get this beacon to work, to try to give them some chance of being found. And Cesar like finds, like there's the fridge, like just like the ice left over service, and he takes the ice and tries to like, they like, he like dumps it and they try to like submerge it as much as they can, and it's not submerged all the way, and they pee on it.
Yeah.
They pee on it.
Yeah.
Because they need this thing submerged. And that really sucks because they also, I'm sure, would very much like to drink that water, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, whatever. You got to figure this out. There's no, like, survival training that they give, like, pilots, the crews. They don't have any, like, Amazon survival training. But there is somebody, and I learned a completely new thing, like, a completely new thing. In amongst these passengers, there's a Garampiero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the accident report that I got was obviously written in Brazilian Portuguese, which I certainly do not speak. And so I got a translated version of it. And this word, Garampiero, the exact translated sentence is, in the meantime, an expedition was organized to try to find water in the region. Successful due to the presence in the group of a Garampiero, whose experience contributed to the discovery of a creek. What's a Garampiero? I look up what a Garampiero is, and it says they are wild cat prospectors, like wild cat gold prospectors,
okay.
Like people of the jungle who find gold. I don't know.
Great.
This is a thing. I didn't know, right? And thank God he was there.
Yeah.
Thank God he was there, right? Because he is the only guy. Thank God he survived. He is the only guy who knows what to do, and he helps them find a creek, and they wait all day, and they did get the transponder to go, but they're waiting and waiting, and their fire is barely putting up any smoke through the canopy, and they are looking for them, right? Like the military, the airline, like everybody is looking for them.
Yeah.
And a helicopter actually does fly pretty close to them, but doesn't see them. Because even though it's a 737, not a small plane, it's just swallowed into this dense jungle. And they wait. And after a couple days, a few of them decide, like, okay, Garampiero, like, our leader, like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
We gotta find something, right? Like, people are injured, people are hungry, like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
And they walk, and incredibly, they actually only walk for 3 or 4 hours through the jungle. And I don't know the distance, because 3 or 4 hours through the jungle, that could be a quarter of a mile, right?
Exactly.
Like, no matter how, it's so dense. It could be more than that. I don't know. But they find, like, a little indigenous farm, and the people there do not have, like, a phone. Like, there's, I can't help you. But they bring them to another farm that's further out, and that person does have a radio. And so they call. And that day, the most injured passenger was airlifted out by helicopter.
Oh, thank God.
And everybody else was rescued.
Oh my God.
After that, 42 people survived.
Oh my gosh. Not a chance that I think anyone was going to survive.
Oh my gosh.
Thank
my gosh. The pilots didn't know, like, when they were rescued and they found out where they were, it was shocking. Like, they didn't know. At no point until they were rescued did they know where they were. They were so lost.
Yeah.
They were so lost. And they were put on trial.
Oh.
And convicted and sentenced to 4 years in jail.
Oh.
And then on appeal, they won the appeal and did like 100 hours of community service.
Beautiful.
Each.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's like, they did. Oh my gosh. that first thing, and part of what helped them win their appeal was that like little thing where they just showed like 21 Pilots. Is that a band? 20, I think it was 21 Pilots. But 20, yeah. Maybe that's what it's from. Someone write them a letter. Yeah. But they like showed the pilots like 0270. What is this? What heading is this? And, you know, 15 of them said, like, it's 270. Yeah. And it's true that, like, there were things that should have helped them figure it out, but they also had, like, the tiniest, like, just such a small fraction of all the stuff that, like, pilots use now or...
Exactly.
And they were lost. People get lost.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ugh.
Oh, my word. Ugh. So were they allowed to fly after that, or they just were like, no, thanks?
I don't know if it's because of the translation or what it is, because like I've seen like, you know, some of my favorite people have done videos and stuff on this story, and they are pretty different, like pretty some like conflicting stuff. But one person said that Nielsen didn't lose his pilot's license, but Cesar did. And I don't, I'm not positive that that's true, but it's plausible, certainly.
Yeah. Man.
I know. Ugh. Ugh, your first day back from vacation.
Seriously. And how long were they out there total? Couple of days.
Yeah. They were rescued. The flight was on September 3rd, and they were all rescued by September 6th, I believe.
Okay.
So, but just, it makes me like, this is such a visceral story, like every part of it, like every single part of it. Like, just like your last flight of the day, and you write the number down, and you write the number your captain wrote down, and then you're lost, and like things just don't click, and like the confirmation bias and the like terror of being lost and the guilt. I don't know if I hope the flight attendant is doing great, but just the guilt that you could feel if like 15 minutes into the flight, somebody told you you were going the wrong way and you didn't say anything. And then like the, like my skin just like itches imagining like that first night, especially.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Especially if like, I mean, if he was one of the people who survived too, like, do we know that?
Yes. Yeah.
He is.
The guy who said,
yeah,
we're going the wrong way. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I wrote his name down, but I'm afraid I'm ill-equipped to pronounce these names, but it's like Epinones.
Yeah. I can't imagine being him.
No.
Because, like, of course, like, it's understandable, you know, like, this kind of stuff does happen, and it is egregious to expect Cesar to know that change. Like, it's just impossible. It's not, I don't know. And on the flip side of that, when you said something 15 minutes in and no one said anything and no one did anything, and now you're in this situation, like, you would have nothing but, like, I don't know, just rage towards the crew.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, can you imagine that guy especially?
Yeah.
Because like the flight attendant survived too.
Right.
So like for days you're like together in that scenario.
Yeah.
And like the way, I don't know, I found it very difficult to find information because there's definitely more to tell about those days in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
I found it very difficult to find information about it. The only information I found was what was included in the report, which was basically, I pretty much said all of it, I think, that they peed on the transponder, that they that the hero Wildcat gold prospector saved the day, and that they walked to a farm, right? Like I don't, but that I cannot imagine that that was a bad couple days.
Yeah.
Because like, and I think about just our different relationships to like guilt and shame and confusion. Like if you're, there's so many different ways, like, okay, like, so if that guy is yelling at the flight attendant because like, I told you we were going the wrong way. And then if the pilots see that he's yelling and they're like, you know, that instinct to be like, why didn't you tell me? But it's not really the flight attendant's fault at all. And it's probably not even the first time in her career that somebody has said like, this doesn't look right. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's just the way that people, I don't, and maybe none of that happened. For all I know, they were amazing to each other and they were kind and gracious. I have no idea. Yeah. Right. Like I have no idea.
Right.
But I don't know. Ooh. There's just, but people are injured and like, I don't know why people weren't buckled, but
yeah.
But I also, I don't know, like you and I were kids when in our state they made it the law that you had to be buckled in the front seat, and everybody talked about it as if like the government was taking your children to join the like whatever,
it was
like
a big
join
deal.
The communist like
right
I don't know farm or whatever right. I don't know like that. There's another story. Yeah, there's another story I'll tell maybe another time, but I'll have to be in a different headspace where some passengers like intentionally like unbuckled before. And we'll talk. It's another.
Okay.
Yeah. I have to be in the right headspace to tell that story. But I know that sometimes people you're very scared. And this is a scenario that maybe would be particularly might put passengers in a headspace not to trust the crew. And like, if you're a person who is like inclined to like, I don't trust you to protect me, I have to figure out how to protect me.
This is
like definitely a situation that would maybe increase that instinct. And so if they're afraid that they're, people sometimes are afraid that they're not going to be able to like get out soon enough or something, if they're buckled, I don't know, but
yeah,
but don't let anybody, I hate that joke so much and I get it, but I hate it when people like make that joke like, do I really have to buckle on a plane? Is it really going to make a difference? Yeah. Sometimes it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But
when you crash,
sorry, I'll get off.
Well, no, like when you crash in the middle of the Amazon, it matters, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and no one just. It can happen. Accidents do happen.
Well, and I think that the like general thought out there is that it's a very like pass fail situation. Like either you land safely or
yes.
The plane is totally obliterated and that's just
like
not,
I'm gonna die anyway.
That's
so,
not the truth. Yeah. That is not the case.
No.
But I get why people think that, but
it's
not the case. But that.
Thank God. I mean, I'm so sorry to the 8 people who didn't
12,
make it.
12 people.
Mm. Say it again.
But 12.
Oh, 12?
12 died.
12.
Yeah. 12 people total.
Ugh.
Yeah.
But it is incredible that so many people lived.
And that's the other thing, like Cesar and Nielsen, like they weren't like totally incompetent.
No,
their
right.
way of handling like we are going to crash in the Amazon in the dark. They did it, right? Like once that was the situation, they did handle it in such a way that like maximized survivability. They're not, I don't know why they didn't figure out. I don't know if maybe they did know they were going west, but they weren't like putting the two things together or whatever it was, because like flying west in the evening is definitely something that you're aware of, right? Like you've been flying from airport to airport to airport to airport. And if you're just not like integrating all of that information.
Right. Right. If you're going east, west, north, south all day.
Right.
You're not really thinking about where the sun is setting.
Right. There was a like kind of a rumor apparently, or like a suspicion, or I'm not sure what to say, that they were listening to the game, like the Argentina versus Brazil game, and that's why they got lost. And that's it's just not true.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't blame people for like, that is just, they did listen to the radio, but in their attempt to get to safety, and they listened to mass, so like not the game. And I don't say that to like scold people who think that or have heard that rumor. I guess I just want to say it out loud in case people have heard that rumor, because the plane had like a CVR, like that definitely would have, that they would have gone to jail. That's that would have been jail. There would not have been
if that was the reason they crashed, then they should go to jail. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but they it's not true. And I guess again, like, people, I don't know,
I mean, I can't, like, right, I mean, it speaks volumes that they sat and listened to mass, I think, like,
trying to come up with anything they could think of to figure out where they are,
right?
And unfortunately, I don't know, someday I desire deeply to understand how radios, like radio waves and like radios work. I don't understand it. But it's basically something about the, like, the ionosphere, like, that radio waves can like bounce off the ionosphere and like make, like, you'll pick up radio stations that are like much further.
Yeah.
And I think that has something to do with the difference between AM and FM radio, which is why like AM radio, you can pick up from like way further away.
Right. Yeah.
But it sounds horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Yeah.
Did your family like listen to games on the radio when you were a kid?
Yeah. My dad did. He always said it was better than the TV announcers.
Oh my gosh.
And we would mute, silence the TV and listen to the radio.
Oh.
Watch the game that way.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is better because they actually are describing everything that's happening.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not all the extra fluff. Yeah. I would be interested to try that now. I think as a kid, I did not appreciate it, but.
No. Was it AM radio that he would listen to, though?
It was AM radio. We definitely would do that for like Yankees games and stuff.
Yeah.
Drive
AM radio just gives me like, I have like a very like strong stress response to AM radio because it is like the sound of like being car sick.
Yes. Yep.
And in the car.
And also like reminds me of the apocalypse a little bit for some reason.
Yeah.
I was like, why are we listening to AM radio? Like, are we in a state of emergency? What's going on?
We are.
Yeah.
It's the past. And it's the apocalypse, and it's AM radio.
Right.
Hockey games on AM radio. Because baseball, at least, I can't. That's hockey on AM, on radio of any kind. It's a miracle if you can understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, baseball is, like, methodical, right? Like, but I don't know how anyone can follow hockey. My dad can. God bless him.
Yeah.
But apparently, I hope he can follow it. Because if he's not following it, and we're just like listening to this horrible sound I'm throwing up. Yeah. Well, I'm throwing up in the back seat. Then I'm going to be very. That's bad news. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. So wow. This is a really, really, really crazy story that I kind of put off for a while.
Yeah.
But I would, I don't know. I would love to get feedback on this because it definitely has like a lot of elements. You know, like somebody knows what like year this plane was and like fully mm-hmm. understands like the kind of like what equipment it had and what it didn't have.
Yeah.
But that person is not me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Great job.
I'm really glad they didn't go to jail.
Oh, seriously. Seriously. I'm very glad they did that like survey or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a good.
Oh, yeah.
That's
right?
A good, like, I don't know.
It's a good tactic, right?
Yeah, it's a good tactic. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is. It is really, I don't know, like I've spent a lot of time lost. Maybe that's part of the reason why because I just know what that's like. Like
yeah.
By the time you realize you're lost, well, you're lost.
You're so lost. Yeah.
Like reversing or trying to like figure out, like trying to retrace your steps.
Yeah.
And like integrate new information is really difficult, and they were doing it under exceptionally difficult circumstances.
Yeah.
And like the sunset while they were flying, and the jungle is
yeah,
like just I don't know.
Yeah,
it just swallowed the plane. I mean, imagine that, really, right? Like a plane, like a rescue helicopter, like did
fly.
Actually get quite close to them and couldn't see them. It just swallowed them.
Yeah. Goodness.
Yeah. So that is Varig 254.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Thanks for being along for that very long ride.
Yeah. That was a great story.
Do you have a fact about wildcat gold prospectors?
No, I don't. But maybe I should. Mm-hmm.
I would love it.
Yes.
If the next time we talk, you have like a information
look.
Prepared about that.
Yes.
Because it sounds fascinating.
Here is my 45-minute dissertation on.
Oh, if this was a better show, that's what it would be.
Yes, like. Yes, exactly.
But it's this show.
It's this show. Yeah, exactly. Norway uses bubble wrap to prevent hypothermia. Did you know this?
What?
So no, I guess sometimes, not all the time. It's not like Norway is, you know, stuffing their like ambulances with bubble wrap or whatever. But sometimes when it's like an extreme situation and critical patients are experiencing hypothermia, a fast way and to get their bodies up to like an appropriate temperature is bubble wrap. And so
really
I guess it is 69% as effective as blankets or equivalent to a sleeping bag. So, I guess, yeah. And I guess it's just like, I don't really know why they do it. Maybe it's more efficient, or I'm not really sure, like that versus emergency blankets, but,
yeah,
it's a thing.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I imagine that also, like, if somebody is injured and has hypothermia, maybe it like helps, like it's a good, like it helps protect an injury and helps you warm up, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. I know that when I, because, you know, I don't know why I'm the way I am, but because I for some reason also sell exotic plants and ship them. I know that like in when it's cold that other people who I try to emulate use bubble wrap for plants, and like insulating plants is kind of a weird thing because plants don't produce, they're living, but they don't produce any heat, right? So like you're not insulating to like keep the heat, the plant, it doesn't produce any heat. So like insulating, it's kind of like a difficult thing, right? And I know that people do use bubble wrap in the winter to ship plants rather than paper or other things.
Right.
So I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah, probably.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bubble wrap's great. I mean, there's a lot of great things about bubble wrap.
No, it's true. It is.
Multi-purpose tool.
Do you find like popping it, like, is that a very joyful activity for you?
It definitely is. I wouldn't say that I get my hands, like, I don't seek it out. But if I have bubble wrap, I will pop it out of the pleasure of popping it. Not so much like, oh, it's bubble wrap, I have to pop it. You know, like, I think there's like a huge bubble wrap craze with a lot of like fidget stuff, which is great. Like, I think, you know, it's a handy tool for sure. But I think I mindlessly use it more so than seek it out.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. What about you?
I might edit this story out, but in high school, in my senior year of high school, we had, I don't remember why, maybe something came to the school, something was delivered to the school, and we had like a bunch of bubble wrap. And I really loved our English teacher. Everybody loved her. Mrs. Atford, like, she was wonderful.
Yeah.
I love her so much, and I hope she's doing great. And she was like, oh, this poor woman. She was so passionate about literature and like Shakespeare and just, and her passion just did not translate to, like, we did not become passionate, and I wish we had.
Yeah.
And like, what a thankless job to be a high school English teacher.
Oh, but my gosh, truly.
For some reason, somebody got the idea, we'll all take like a little bit of bubble wrap into English class and like pop it, like, just at different times, just intermittently. And we did it for like 5 minutes, and she just didn't respond in any way.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh no, like, can she not hear? Or like, we were like, we stopped, and like, everybody felt really guilty afterwards.
Amazing.
But in retrospect, probably she was just like,
these kids,
I'm here to talk about Shakespeare. Yeah. I'm not here for shenanigans. Yeah. Like, I'm not gonna, I'm just gonna ignore that.
Yeah, right.
And very successful. Yeah. Good job. Smart woman.
Yeah.
Right? But
it works most of the time.
It works. Yeah. It worked great. It totally, yeah.
Because there's no joy. Like, it's just annoying at that point. No. It's like, why are we doing this?
Right. Exactly. And that is, why do you do anything when you're a teenager?
Exactly.
You don't know.
Yeah.
It's just like an idea, and now it's happening, and oh no, it didn't go well. Like,
yeah.
That's most of, you know, your 11th grade or senior year, right? So,
yeah.
This has been a long one. So,
I was going to say, do we have anything to say? Do we have any announcements or anything? I don't think so.
Well, we have like a half announcement. It's not really an announcement. The usual announcement that we love all of you so much.
Of course.
And that you're just so lovely and wonderful. And like, thank you for like sharing your like joy and stories and like everything that is wonderful about you with us. We are coming up on 100 episodes.
Yeah.
Which is bananas. And we do have like a really cool episode, like a really cool story kind of saved up for our 100th episode. But my birthday is on Saturday.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Is that an announcement?
It is.
I love birthday. But you could all tell us your birthdays, and then we could all celebrate together.
Yeah.
Tell us just good news. You got good news in your life?
Let us know.
We like good news. Yeah, we just want to share in your joy. And I don't know.
What a world.
Wild time to be alive. What a world. What a world.
Yeah.
What a world. Mm. Yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, people talk about like how we like went to space with like technology that's like technology that can like do less than like a microwave can now or whatever, right?
Right.
And that's an exaggeration. But just in this flight, I mean, I keep thinking about that, like this idea of, like, my kids won't even be able to understand why I was lost in, like, all the times I've been
exactly.
lost. Because, like, being lost is going to be, like, hope, you know, whatever. Maybe just not a frequent occurrence anymore.
I was,
and something like this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was literally trying to think of when I experienced, like, the last time I experienced the feeling of being lost.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, because I just have, like, we just have our phones.
Yeah. So it'd be maybe a time either before phones or in a country where your phone didn't work
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you, when we went to Costa Rica, that was the first time that, like, ever in my life that I've been in, like, another country and had a phone that worked.
Same.
Yeah.
And it was nice.
Yeah.
Game changer.
Very nice. Yeah, like, I went to Canada, like, just to Niagara Falls with my beautiful aunt Mary Beth and her lovely friend Tambi, and we had a great time. But, like, yeah, my phone just, like, I called her when, like, I had to go, like, put money in the meter or whatever, and, like, just called her, and I was like, oh, like, it's the future. I could just make a phone call on my cell phone in Canada. But, yeah. And I'm just saying all that because, like, what these people experienced is, like, I mean, even in, like, if this had happened in New York State in 1989 with, like, a modern, like, a modern, at the time, 737, this would be impossible.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Like, it's just, I don't know, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Talk to, I don't know, your parents or your grandparents or, like, your... You're the local people who are older than you, who are in your life, and just, like, have a chat, see mm-hmm. what it's like,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. But my grandparents love that stuff.
Yeah. I love that stuff, too.
Yeah.
Did you ever ask your grandparents about their grandparents?
Oh, yeah. My grandparents talk about their grandparents a lot.
I love that stuff so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. We are going to have my grandma on here.
Oh, I want to so badly.
Yeah, we will soon.
Yeah.
We will soon.
That would be, I really want to do that.
She said to me the other day in the car, you know, I used to be a pilot, right?
Oh, I was like, I love your grandma.
Yes.
I want to hear about it so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She would love to tell us.
Ugh. I love you, Mariah.
I love you, too.
I love you, Grandma.
Yeah.
And we love all of you.
Everyone
see you next week,
yeah,
guys.
Have a great week.
Love you.
Love you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Pod Crashed. We so hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us for any reason, you can find us on Instagram and TikTok, or you can email us at thepodcrashed@gmail.com. We do have a little bit of this and a little bit of that in the works, and hopefully one of these days, we will have some cool announcements for you. But in the meantime, we will see you next week.